I will call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum, but according to our vice chair, Representative Ward, all the important people are here, you and us, so we are going to start. And we have only one item on the agenda today, but it is a big item, and it is the Special Education Task Force report. For to refresh everybody's memories, or for anybody new to the committee, we had last year, between the first and second year of the biennium, these good folk on the task force looked at the statutes to see where, if anywhere, in the federal or the state statutes, there would be agreement that we could conform to the federal standard. And they reported in with two things. We did attempt to legislate those things last year, but due to all the mess at the end of the session, we still have to deal with them this year. But we did send the task force back to finish up because they had not looked at the rules, and then come forward with any rules that they thought could be conformed to the federal standard. We also gave them a new tool which they asked for. They said it's very hard to come up with things that could conform to the federal standard because there weren't a lot of things that they wanted to go to the federal standard, but that they could, with a new tool of being able to modify or fix things, they could come up with some middle ground on some more things. And so I guess I was thinking, I don't know how many more were, I was thinking they would also, with that new tool, re-go through the statutes again and see if more than just two things could be looked at. But we'll ask about that when they come up. We're going to hear from Commissioner from the Bureau of Mediation, Stephen Hoffmeyer, and then also Marianne Johnson, who was the facilitator of the group. If you could both come up and give us the opening, and then we'll have testimony from some people from the public that have asked to testify on the report. And before we, is Judith or Marianne Johnson here? Doesn't look like it. Okay. Well, I guess Commissioner Hoffmeyer is on his own. But while you're up there, we now do have a quorum. So, Representative Morgan, have you looked at the minutes?
Madam Chair, I have, and I'll move the minutes of February 12th.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes of February 12th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Welcome, Mr. Hoffmeyer. Our procedure is for you to restate your name for the record, and then if you could give us your comments on the task force, and if Ms. Johnson shows up, she can help you out.
That would be wonderful. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm Stephen Hoffmeyer, Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services, the position I've held for about 5 weeks now. So I'm looking forward to presenting this report. We have submitted the, it is my pleasure to be here today to submit the Special Education Advisory Task Force report. Hopefully joining me shortly will be Marianne Johnson, the facilitator for the 2 years of this task force, and the audience already contains members of the task force. In general, looking at a big picture summary here, there was a lot of accomplishment by the task force. They showed individual and organizational perspectives that were discussed, debated, and resolved through this process. Positions have been amended, positions have been changed, and a deeper understanding of special education as it affects the users in the state of Minnesota was achieved during this task force facilitation process. As you remarked, Madam Chair, the first year legislative mandate was to look at special education statutes on the federal side and the Minnesota side, and also special education rules. The statutory review was accomplished and submitted last year. The legislature then granted additional time in the second year of the task force to go back and look at special education rules and also look at aversive deprivation procedures, and for the task force to come up with some recommendations after reviewing and discussing those rules and procedures. The task force has agreed. The additional time was necessary to complete those tasks. Additionally, the task force identified some other rules, some ancillary rules that, if time permitted, would be reviewed by the task force and submitted to this committee. I'm happy to report that in the reports themselves, the first report is the 2008-2009 Special Education Task Force Review of Minnesota Special Education Rules. That identifies, going in the columns, the Minnesota rule on the far left, the title, whether it exceeded or did not exceed federal mandates, a summary definition of that provision of the rule, and whether and the vote of the task force to conform to meet minimum federal regulations or not to conform to minimum federal requirements. The next column shows a vote to amend to make more effective, and if there was a majority vote on making an amendment, you'll see the next column suggests amendments by the task force. Additionally, there was a column that was utilized for comments from the task force to help provide some more clarity on that particular rule. For instance, there might have been the task force belief that there was no comparable federal legislation, that Minnesota's rule was unique in this particular regard, and you'll see the votes for that. The second document is the 2008-2009 Special Education Task Force Review of Aversive and Deprivation Rules. This is a summary chart that the task force first reviewed to look at whether they should keep the Minnesota rule as it relates to aversive deprivation or whether they should amend it. And you'll see that in the task force work, they recommended one rule be kept as is and a number of rules be amended with some suggestions in the following document. And a couple of rules were recommended for repealing. The last document, it is a lengthy title, 2009 Special Education Task Force of Aversive and Deprivation Procedures Review, School Restraint and Seclusion Comparison Chart and Proposed Task Force Amendments. This is a document that was created by one of the task force members, Dan Stewart, at the Minnesota Disability Law Center. It was a document that was being reviewed also at that time by the two other organizations, NAMI and MACE. And so rather than reinventing the wheel, so to speak, this task force took that existing document that was being reviewed by those special education interested parties and came up with their own column, their own commentary on the right-hand side, which is entitled the Special Education Task Force Proposed Amendment and Votes. And you'll see some description there what the task force believes might be the future for special education on the issue of school restraint and seclusion. Some items on these documents will reflect first four pages reflect a 10-member participation by the task force, as this was done late in the process for the task force charge. There are a number of pages where only 9 members were able to participate, and you'll see that in the reflection of the voting or the abstention. Some pages, perhaps starting on page 14 of this last document, you'll see a notation that time did not permit, but the task force believes that they did identify some of the higher priorities for this group, particularly rules on page 17 and page 21, which were reviewed and analyzed and provided some input. In a summary fashion, the Bureau of Mediation Services, as the convener of this group, wants to thank the individuals for participating in this. This was a long 2-year process for the task force. It took a lot of time. The task force came from various positions, various viewpoints on the issue of special education in Minnesota, how the Minnesota rules and federal rules interact, and the difficulties with that. And they came up with a document that is very thorough, a very specific rule by rule, statute by statute. I commend them for doing the work that they have done. The work was challenging and at times contentious. But there were several opportunities where discussions were allowed for members to share and expand their perspectives, and the members did that. They reached unanimous agreement on a number of issues, and those are identified item by item. The Bureau of Mediation Services would also like to thank the facilitator, Mary Ann Johnson, for doing an outstanding job of keeping the task force productive and engaged. Also, we wish to thank the Minister of the Department of Education for providing background documents and serving as a resource to the task force.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hoffmeyer, and it was a lot of work, and I would like to thank, on behalf of the committee, the public members of the task force as well. I wonder, do you have a list of them, if you could name them off and they could raise their hands?
Certainly.
Since they did put in many, many hours and 2 years of their life.
Certainly. Willie Jackson, special education consultant. Virginia Richardson with PACER, Parent Advocacy Coalition for Educational Rights. Dawn Seigoff, a parent. Jackie McCormick with ARC, Greater Twin Cities. Don McNeil, a parent. Kim Newsom, Special School District Number 1, Minneapolis. Dan Stewart, Minnesota Disability Law Center. Stacy Pumper, Education Minnesota. Grace Swab, Minnesota School Boards Association. Denny Almer, Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. And again, Mary Ann Johnson with Mary Ann Johnson and Associates Consulting Services.
Very good, thank you. And for members that were on this committee last year, you may remember that the commissioner was James Cunningham, who right at towards the end of the process, which is why Commissioner Hoffmeyer's only been on the job 5 weeks, Commissioner Cunningham got appointed by Governor Pawlenty to be a judge. And so he was taken away and did call and checked in with myself and others very often, and he said that he thought that the committee, even though it was slow starting in the first year, was doing substantive thorough work in the second year, and that we would be in good hands also with Commissioner Hoffmeyer. So thank you very much for your work. And I take it Mary Ann Johnson is not here yet. Oh, she is. Okay. So I'm not sure if it's on my agenda to have you come up and add your 2 cents worth if you wish. Otherwise, we can just recognize you in the audience.
If the committee has any process questions, Marianne would be the wonderful resource for that, or if there's any greater explanation of the charts that were created or the documentation provided to the committee.
So she's here to help answer questions. Okay. Please have a seat then, and if you could introduce yourself for the tape, and then we'll have questions from the committee.
Sure. My name is Marianne Johnson. My company name is M.T. Johnson Associates, and I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you very much, and for your work as well.
Thank you.
Questions from the committee. This is, members, part of our, we started this before we had all this interest in mandate reduction. Representative Tilbury is heading up for this committee with members from this committee an effort in looking at mandate reduction. We noticed last year that special education was the fastest growing area of our budget, and quite often legislators receive feedback from school districts, parents, and others that there's a lot of paperwork connected with special education, and it gets in the way of direct services for students. I had a special ed teacher in my district say that she took home so much work that she spent more time after hours on the paperwork than she did with students. And so I think this work is very important. But if there are no questions from members, then if you two could stick around, maybe the testimony will spark some questions. So thank you.
Thank you.
The first person on the list to testify is Stacy Pumper from Education Minnesota, and then if we could have the second person come up at the same time, Grace Kelleher from the Minnesota School Boards Association. Welcome to the committee, and you're both on the list, so whichever one wants to go first, please identify yourself for the tape.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We're passing around a letter that the School Boards Association, in a collaboration with other members of the task force, from last year shared with you. Since we have new members, I wanted to share where we agreed, where we didn't agree, and sort of how we got to this process this year. You will not find a letter this year, partly because we had an attorney with us at that time draft this letter in front of you, and my association could not afford the cost to redo that again. I wish I had wonderful news that this was the secret to the pudding that we've been waiting for. The secret to the chicken might be the better way, thinking of KFC. Unfortunately, this report shows a lack of reflection of costs, lack of consideration of needless paperwork, lack of consideration of student-teacher contact, or even what court implications this could mean forward. And I don't want to demean the task force members themselves. They were diligent people who gave all they had. But the process was not only, it was always limited in time and scope. If you look at the statute you have in front of you and go across the page, oftentimes we were limited to 5 minutes of conversation per item. Now look at the item. Do you think they're easily summed up and all those thoughtful considerations are brought into that moment of time? These rules also need to be looked at in the background of the statute, and doing statutes 1 year and really the majority of rules next year, I think really limits our ability to make the kind of effective blockbuster punch the legislature was looking for. The reform originally envisioned by Representative Greiling is something we've all hoped that we're sort of out on the future. Unfortunately, I don't believe, and my association doesn't, that the lofty goals were completed and reflected in the complexities of daily special education challenges. I suggest that these challenges and decisions should be made with thoughtful consideration not only of students, but of financial ramifications and judicial considerations. All in all, you folks truly are the best ones to decide where the reform needs to happen and where it starts. Truly, we believe the buck stops here. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Kelleher? Okay, Ms. Humper, please state your name for the record and title.
Okay, Madam Chair, my name is Stacey Humper. I'm a special education teacher representative on the task force this year and last year, and I'm also a parent of a child with special needs. I want to start out by telling you or thanking you for this wonderful experience I've been a part of. I think the task force has really been a wonderful experience. I've really enjoyed working with the other members on the task force. They brought a vast amount of knowledge to the table each meeting, and it was a pleasure working with them. There are a couple of items that I think are critical that I'd like to discuss with you. I'm just actually bring to your attention as you look at the rules we discussed, the grid, long grid, I guess. You'll see there's a column of exceeds and does not exceed. And in my opinion, I believe Minnesota exceeds federal requirements, federal minimum requirements. There are many statutes that we discussed last year and rules this year that aren't in federal law at all, but Minnesota created those rules. And then those that you can coincide with and find in federal requirements, Minnesota has actually expanded upon. Yes, we have a wonderful education system here in Minnesota. I think that we're all well aware of that. But all of these extra demands in that have put on teachers, I guess, with the rules and requirements, extra rules and requirements that aren't in federal law, that is part of why I think we are losing our special education teachers. We're losing them to other fields. We're losing them to going into regular educators. But to be truthful, we're losing to regular educators too, because they're having extra demands on them now with all of these rules. And 45% of the rules we discussed, and this is not including aversion and deprivation, were voted unanimous by all task force members to exceed federal requirements. So I think that speaks volumes when you look at the task force members and the grid of who we are, the stakeholders. If we came to that much of an agreement, we know that there are some issues that we can zoom in on and really look at. Another item I wanted to talk to you about was many of these rules that were discussed, there was suggestions for if they should be, or even comments for suggestions for amendments. And some of those were, because we couldn't actually put into writing all the amendments, some of them were MDE should convene a stakeholder group to further look into this rule, such as emotional behavior disability criteria. Criteria actually came into this quite a bit for MDE to hold a stakeholder group. However, in my opinion, I do not believe or feel that MDE should be holding the stakeholder groups, work groups, committees. I would like to see it be convened by neutral parties such as DMS. I think they did a wonderful job. I really appreciate all the work and the help that they gave this task force. It wasn't always easy. But MDE is a stakeholder in itself. They're recommending rules. They're monitoring the rules. They're giving memos for the rules. So they have a stake in this as well. We, in this task force, this year around, MDE was available to answer questions, and that's valuable for us. Why is this rule important? Why is it put in place? Now, that was a valuable use for us. But I guess I'll end with, I would, if we see forward a group put together, a different committee, looking at criteria, certain criteria, again, EBD as an example, emotional behavior disabilities, I'd like to see a neutral party put that together.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Pumper and Ms. Keller, thank you very much for your testimony and for your work. Ms. Pumper, a comment that you made, I just want to make sure I have it right. You said that 45% of the requirements that you looked at exceeded, or unanimously, members of the task force agreed that they exceeded the federal standard. Do I have that right?
Ms. Pumper.
Okay. Yes, I counted 62 rules that we actually discussed, and then looked at which ones we unanimously voted upon. And 45% of them we did vote on unanimously, and that's why I see, I really think that's huge. That was very successful for us to be able to discuss that as a task force and actually come to that agreement. And then those, there were differing opinions on some of the other ones where 55% would be, either Minnesota had the language where there wasn't language before, so you'd see in the writing on the paper, that big thick paper of the rules, that no comparable language.
Hmm.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. And I guess for either one of you, and maybe for the other testifiers who are going to come up before us, was there any sense of the value we are getting out of those additional, that at least the 45% that everyone agreed are above and beyond the federal requirements? Was there any sense, any discussion about the value that that is adding? to our educational system for the cost that it has.
Ms. Schwab, or Kelleher, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Grace Feld with the school. Grace Kelleher now. with Missouri School Boards Association, and if you look at general comments 2 on that second page, I think that states that the statute and rules will not change school districts' responsibility to provide education for these children. So the discussion might be, and I think it's a lot to ask the task force of individuals who care about kids to do, how far should Minnesota go? Where should we draw that line? And keep in mind, this discussion only really had over what the rule said. So we didn't say, well, this rule really costs us an additional $2 million, $5 million. We just look solely at that rule. Does it exceed? Does it not? And then discuss it. Maybe Stacy wants to add first.
Ms. Pumper.
And I guess that's when a separate group committee would come, would be beneficial to look at the cost savings of that.
So. Rep. Morgan.
One more question then, Madam Chair. Thank you. There are a list of recommendations, statutes and rules recommended for amendment or repeal in the 2008 legislative session. I don't think we got to any of those, but is there a sense, does the School Boards Association or this task force have a sense of what savings there would be if we were to repeal any or all of these? Do we have a sense of that, or is that something that we need to examine further?
Rep. Morgan, I think they're saying that wasn't in their scope, and it sounds like they had 5 minutes to deal with some of them. And so, but we do have people from the department that perhaps, unless they want to take a stab at that before we call the department up here. Okay. I would like to ask, Ms. Pumper, you're saying you think that there's further work that needs to be done. You know, we legislators, because we're part-time, we're sort of giving this homework assignment to you all, and now you're saying that the department you don't think is neutral enough to do more work on it. It should be the Bureau of Mediation. Are you saying that the group that you were part of has gone as far as it can, and you're now thinking there should be another group, or exactly what did you mean by there needs to be further work with the Bureau of Mediation, Ms. Pumper?
Well, we looked at 62 rules. We could only go as far as we could go. But another group, if there was enough discussion among us and that we were able to throw out different ideas than it was, I think this needs to be further looked into. Oh, our time's up, so we have to move on. Mm-hmm. And that's when it would be a good idea in terms of criteria, for example. If you're identifying a lot of students in the area of SLD, in the area of EBD, there's more students than in special education. Maybe that's part of what needs to be looked at in criteria. One of my ideas is separating the E from the B in EBD, emotional from behavioral. Now, a separate committee, even just what I discussed right now, that needs to look further into it. And not us as a task force, but a separate committee. I don't know if anyone else is available than BMS. I'm just saying that I thought they were very valuable.
Okay, thank you very much. I never myself have liked the EBD label, but I guess that's federal. It just seems that the B goes with the E sometimes, but the idea that it looks that it could be just behavior is kind of not exactly what that category is probably trying to get at. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's been brought to my attention a few weeks ago in terms of how far does special ed services reach out from the school into the community. Is it just school activities that special services need to be provided to families, or does it reach out beyond the school facilities or school-sponsored activities?
I think I'm probably not the best one to answer this question. I don't work with students that had disabilities that it would expand further into the community. I do know that there are disabilities where that is. They do need to expand further into the community. Probably the department would be best to answer that, or some of our advocates who work with those students.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, you know, it's been brought to my attention a few weeks ago that when does the responsibility of the school district end when it comes to special education services? Is it within the confines of the school activities, or does it go beyond activities that maybe are not even sponsored by the schools? So that was my question. I don't know if there's anybody here that can answer that. So.
Maybe we can get from the departments up here. That might be a good chance to answer that, ask that question again. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To you, the testifiers, it was indicated that 45% of the rules that you looked at, and I heard you mention that you looked at 52 rules. So, if my math is correct, that leaves about 34 rules somewhere in that area that were looked like they were somewhat okay. But I noticed in the letter that Wisconsin has 7 administrative rules. Can you tell us what the difference between the 34 rules remaining in Minnesota and the 7 in Wisconsin? What difference of content in those two rules, those two state rules?
Ms. Kelleher?
Madam Chairman, Representative Ward, we use that for a comparison purpose only. The 32 that we discussed some last year with the statutes. We got into a couple of those, and then we have the verse of deprivation, which is a separate document for you to look at today. But I would encourage you to consider that federal law has mandated states to try and reduce the number of special education requirements they have at the state level to try to create a uniform environment across the nation of services. And Wisconsin took hold of that mandate and repealed a huge block of their statutes, and yet it still is providing, and you can finally find argument about equal quality special education services. So we use it as an example of what we consider hope for people that, you know, certainly we're interested in streamlining but still providing quality services for kids.
Okay. If there are no other questions, then thank you very much. And I think, why don't we get the rest of the testimony in from the committee, and then we'll have the department come up, because I think a lot of the questions might be for them. So thank you very much. We have Virginia Richardson from PACER and Jackie McCormick from ART, also task force members. Welcome to the committee, and whoever's going first, if you could state your name, please, and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Jackie McCormick. I'm senior advocate with ARC Greater Twin Cities. Part of me is really stunned by the testimony that has been presented so far. If you look at the chart that talks about the special ed rules, in our opinion, there was much more difference presented in the past few minutes than there was during the time of the report meeting. It was our understanding, if you especially look at the columns that talk about the suggested amendments and the columns, there really was a lot of agreement on the amendments and changes and what we should do about that. The consumer advocate members of the task force emphasized 4 points in the legislature in its review of the task force work. 1, there was full and fair opportunity for the task force members and their respective organizations to raise concern and propose amendments to special education law. 2, the results of the task force work showed many areas of agreement and proposed means to address concerns. 3, certain concerns with special education laws were beyond the scope of the task force and needed to be addressed further. 4, there was an emerging consensus on the restraints and seclusion laws that should be respected by the legislature. In further information, there was a full and fair opportunity for task force members and their respective organizations to raise concerns and propose amendments to special education laws. The task force prioritized its work by reviewing Minnesota special education rules with this new charge and, if time were available, to revisit work from the 2007 and 2008 meetings on the statutes. Due to time limitations, the task force members were only able to review Minnesota rules. However, in doing so, the task force members and their organizations they represented had full and fair opportunity to raise concerns and propose how to address these concerns. The majority of the task force times and efforts were devoted to this process. And as such, we recommend that the legislature should substantially consider and defer to the task force work on these areas if any organization proposes to repeal or amendments of these same laws. We note that during the 2008 special education rulemaking process, many school districts affiliated with individuals and education organizations requested that the Minnesota Department of Education and the administrative law judge defer to the task force work. Now that the task force has completed its work, we recommend that the legislature weigh the task force work heavily in any deliberations to repeal or amend special education laws. Two, the results of the task force work showed many areas of agreement and proposed means to address concerns. The task force agreed by majority and often much more that many areas of Minnesota regulations for special education should not be amended to corresponding federal regulations. Again, and overall, the task force members agreed by majority and often much more that many areas should not be amended to conform to federal regulations. Instead, the special education rules needed to be further examined and approved, not repealed. Three, certain concerns with special education laws were beyond the scope of the task force and need to be addressed further. In its review of rules, the task force voted in many instances to have another group or process fully address the concerns raised. From our standpoint, the decision was made in recognition of the consensus around the table and the range of concerns, the limited time available to the task force, the limited expertise of some task force members on specific issues that needed more analysis and elaboration, and in some cases, existing work being done by other organizations related to the same issue. Four, there was emerging consensus on the restraint and seclusion laws that should be respected by the legislature. The task force divided its work on restraint and seclusion, also called aversive deprivation laws, into two parts. First, the task force reviewed current laws and voted A, to keep as is, B, to keep with an amendment, C, to repeal. Members also could abstain for this decision. There were two restraint and seclusion laws that the task force voted to repeal. In contrast with the other 17 seclusion and restraint laws, there was general consensus with more than 7 member votes that laws should be restrained with an amendment. Therefore, it was clear that a shared understanding about the fundamental needs for the laws and rules needed to improve them. Second, the task force then approached the most difficult work of developing proposed amendments to the restraint and seclusion laws. To do so, the task force reviewed the restraint and seclusion comparison work and began to reach consensus on specific language. This emerging consensus is contained in the task force results and reports an important building block for the remaining parts of the restraint and seclusion laws. We also note that there were several groups and individuals participating in efforts to reach consensus on this controversial set of laws.
Thank you very much. Ms. Richardson, if you could state your name for the tape and give us your testimony.
My name is Virginia Richardson. I have been an advocate at Taster for 28 years because I started when I was 5 years old. I buried my husband on Friday, but I felt this was important enough that I need to come.
Very sorry. Thank you for being here.
You know, what you can do sometimes seems the right thing to do at the time, but in retrospect, it's the wrong thing to do. Milwaukee, the school district of Milwaukee is not under court order because they've been found to not be providing special education for their students. So they are under very expensive court order. And Minnesota last year had less than 10 due process hearings. Some states have as much as 600. So how can we compare the rules and the cost without comparing all the costs? My daughter Deborah was born with, she had a high temperature and she had scratched tissue on the brain, so she was left to be cognitively involved. She lives downtown across from the Hyatt Regency and volunteers with America Building, and the things she takes from the public if she gets low subsidized rent for that where she lives, and she gets Social Security. That's, and she's on Medicare. I went to a conference in D.C. last week, and there they have been in training of six persons with cognitive disability, and they're trying to train her how to start her own business. She said to me before I went, Mom, do you know how to establish a business account at a bank? Because she now is trying to start her own business. How can we compare the cost of education with its impact on human life? And so I have a very different take from the people who previously spoke. And they spoke from their experience, but now I'm going to speak from mine as a consumer of service. Debbie came out of, we were told when Debbie was 5 years old, a social worker from the school and a psychologist came to our house and told us that Debbie would never learn to read and write, and that we should place her in a home for severely retarded children. That was the word they used. A friend of ours was the principal of school, and we went to Jack Ott and said, can Debbie go into first grade like others? And we found this, he said, if you find a teacher who will allow her to be in a classroom. We found that teacher, and we just asked that the teacher try to teach Debbie like everybody else, who there was no extra time. And much of everyone's amazed that they learned to read and write in first grade like all of the children. It wasn't the fact that she's not cognitively involved. There are some limitations. But I think we have good special education in Minnesota, and Debbie came out with a sixth grade reading level and a sixth grade math level. So she takes the newspaper, she reads it, she can keep a better bank book than I can, because 2 and 2 is always 4. She has difficulty relating knowledge. I never could teach her to look at the weather and decide what she would wear the next day. She lives right downtown Minneapolis. I said, Debbie, look out your window and see what people who are walking down the mall are wearing, and you put on the same thing. And so I come from the part where I want good education for all of my 4 children. And I have been very pleased with the education in Minnesota. I recently served on a Department of Licensure task force, and what I learned in that task force, that the turnover in special education is the same as it is in regular education. Now, if that's not true, somebody told me there, okay? And the complaint that teachers leave the field for the paperwork, I understand that it's paperwork. But up there with the paperwork is lack of administrative support, and I'm a person who likes the truth. Okay? I just like the truth. And so the half-truth just doesn't get it with me. Okay? And I believe you can look at the 10 rules in Milwaukee. I wonder how many due process hearings they're going to end up with. You know, there are some, I said Minnesota last year had less than 10. There are some states that have 600, 200, 400. So what's the cost of that? I think our rules are spelled out more specifically than a lot of states, but I think it also keeps us out of trouble because we both understand what the rules are, the special ed people and the parents. And I think I guess I want to thank you because I think I was on the task force last year, and I think this year our work was much more clearly identified. Last year we were just to decide whether it expanded or exceeded. And this year, we could talk about it exceeded, and then we could talk about the need to amend it. And when you had those votes to exceed last year, there were a lot of votes that exceeded, but there was not the vote to repeal. And let me tell you some of those exceed places was. Federally, you're given a choice whether you want to serve children in that birth to 3 age group. And Minnesota early chose to do that. And if we look at research, it shows that if you serve those children early, we have much better outcomes. But it said, if you're going to serve them early, then the state has to develop some rules on how that should be done. So we then would have a rule that exceeded. We might all agree that we want to start service at birth because it makes sense. And if we look at financial outcomes, it certainly makes sense. But that would show up on one of those Stacy mentions of those 45 and 60. So there were things in the law that if the state chose to do it, then they had to develop rules to do it. And those all belong in that exceed. So everything that looks like exceed is really exceed, but there's a, what is the commentator that talks about there's another side of the story called somebody? And the other side of the story is included in those exceed or those things that everybody thought it was good to serve children birthers who have disabilities. We believe it's better for the families, it's better for the child, and we also have better outcomes if we look at education. And so I haven't looked at all the exceeds like Stacy did, and I trust that you gave the right numbers, but it is more complex than just looking at 45 rules and exceeding. And I guess, you know, I do think reasons that people can disagree. And I realize I'm coming from the parent and family part of that. I think the task force worked well together. I think we all had a say, and then we kind of voted. I don't think there's ever going to be enough time to do anything. And if you ask somebody to cost it out, we're the wrong group. We can't do the costing. We can do where the rule makes sense, and if we think it should be kept, if it should be amended. And I guess I want to support the Department of Education because I have found them extremely fair in trying to work. I've been on a few stakeholders groups, and on those stakeholders groups represent people from many different viewpoints. And that's what you expect on a stakeholder group. We don't come from one place like the school. We're all of that. And I represent parents proudly, and I like good schools. I expect to pay for them, and I expect to work with the staff in those schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me ask you a question about, you mentioned, I think it was Ms. Richardson, that it worked better this second year than the first year. We had given you that tool to be able to modify rather than
keep
or scrap.
Right.
And then I was, you know, as I said, I think that it was the understanding of the legislature, but it may not have been worded that way, that with that new tool, the statutes would also have been gone through again, not just the rules. And it sounds like time-wise, you had all you could do just to get through the rules with the keep or change or remove. But since you did not have that tool when you went through the statutes, do you think that there were some that could have been agreed to be modified had you had that tool, or do you think that the keeping or the eliminating was good enough for the statutes?
I think we could have reached some consensus on that. I think last year, you know, we kind of got to the statutes and didn't get to the rules. And so we chose this time to begin with the rules, and then we didn't get to the statutes. So yes, I think the language that was used in our charge was much more conducive to finding places of agreement.
Thank you very much. Ms. Richardson, or Ms. McCormick, rather, do you have another comment, or are you in agreement with that statement as well?
I would be full in agreement, but I do strongly believe that if we had more time and had a different charge last year, there could have been areas that we would have come to agreement. One of the things that I thought was wonderful is being able to have a long discussion about what the different sides might have thought of things and realize that in some issues we really weren't all that far apart. So I think given more time and a different charge, we could have looked at them and made and agreed on some amendments. Maybe not 100%, but I do think some agreements could have been made.
And I think everybody participated.
Richardson.
I think everybody participated freely in how they felt. I think we were concerned as to how schools or how teachers looked at this issue and was willing to consider that. So, yes, I believe that.
Okay. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I come at this rather disappointed, in fact, very disappointed, because I just finished co-chairing with John Hoffman, formerly with PACER, the Special Ed Task Force for District 11. And we started with federal rules, state rules, and then local policy, and went through and changed what we could in local policy, streamlined the administration, And what we found is no one wants to deny any facility or any education for children with special needs. That's not a question, but it's the administration that goes with it and how often you have to send a report, how long the reports are, how many people have to handle the reports. And I wish that we were actually hoping for something to come out of this for District 11 to further streamline our actions, because we had a very similar case. In fact, a comment was made to Mr. Hoffman by a special ed teacher saying, I don't have time to deal with those kids. I've got so much work to do. Mm-hmm. Not what we want to hear. I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just saying I'm very disappointed that we didn't have some recommendations here on specific rules and specific policies for the state that would have made it easier for the districts to comply and to take some of the paperwork off the teachers.
And I think, Representative, we do have some recommendations on the rules, but it's the statute that they didn't go back and look at again. We had two, is all, from last year. And Shannon Petrick has just given me the charge again to refresh my memory that the charge to the task force in laws 2008 was to submit a report that identifies and clearly and concisely explains each provision in state law or rule that exceeds the minimum federal requirement contained in law or regulation for providing special education programs and services to eligible students. And then the report also must recommend which state statutes and rules that exceed a minimum federal requirement may be amended to conform with minimum federal requirements or made more effective as determined by a majority of the task force members. The task force, and then it goes on about the aversion and deprivation. So they, you know, were given statutes and rules the first year, only had time for the statutes, as they said. Then the next year, they only did the rules because they didn't have time to go back and see the statutes. So it will be up to this committee to decide if we want to, you know, charge them to go back through the statutes again. It sounds like that might be fruitful. I'm not sure if the same people, you know, have a tolerance for being sent back to the drawing board yet again. And we do have, you know, this mandate reduction fervor that we're dealing with here in the legislature that we'll have. So I think with all those things into consideration, we have to decide what we want to do here.
Can I just speak to this?
To remember which is which. Ms. Richardson.
I've read lots of IEPs from a lot of different districts, and they look very different. And I don't know what the minimum standard is, but I belong to a group of parent centers from all over the United States, and that's about 110 of those. And we asked federally if they would come up with some minimum standards for something. Because I find sometimes if there's a threat of a due process in your district or you have one, a lot of things are added that people must do that are not part of the law, but it's because your attorney has told you need to put this in and you need to have a checkoff list for this. And I'm not saying this is true for you in Anoka in District 11, but we have said because, you know, the district gets to say what you have to do as a teacher. And sometimes that's more than the feds or the states are requiring. But you want to make sure teachers have covered things, so if you get in trouble, that you're safe. And I'm not here to speak to the positive or negative of that. But we have asked the feds to come up with the minimum examples of an IEP and some other things. And they promised us that they would do that next year. Now, I don't know, because it's a good thing, but but I think we do recognize we would like to see what would answer the minimum standards at the federal level.
Thank you, and I've heard that too, that sometimes you look into the details, districts have done things mm-hmm. to protect themselves from being sued that are exceed, you know, we have the federal requirements, then we have the state, mm-hmm. and then we have yet again districts that have even higher standards because of fear of lawsuits. So all of those things.
But if it answers the federal level, then it would fly.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who this should be addressed to, but something that was said just struck a chord with me, and that is when you talked about due process, I don't know if any of you have experienced this in your own school districts, but I feel like there is some abuse of the due process system, and that it allows a small group, but even so, this is the year that we're looking at mandates and reducing costs and increasing efficiency, is that there are parents who can use that system to almost sabotage a school district by requesting, you know, hundreds of documents overnight because of deadlines and that type of thing. So I'm wondering if any part of this process addressed any of that.
Ms. Richardson or Ms. McClellan?
No, I don't think we were into that depth of thing. I guess I would compliment Minnesota because we have a lot of alternate dispute resolution processes. So we have mediation, we have facilitated IEP, and we have something in the law in Minnesota since its inception that I think has really kept due process here in San Luis. What is the first, if you disagree with the IEP?
Conciliation
with the school district. And I guess I want to say, people who are divorced, don't be insulted when I say this, but I think due process sometimes gets in like a difficult divorce, okay? And sometimes I've seen that on the school district side, and sometimes I've seen that on the parents. I have seen a school district take parents to due process when it just didn't make any sense at all. In which I call the special ed director and say, why don't you talk to your school, your school board and see if you cannot do this. And so I've seen excesses on both sides, and I do know what you say is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I have a son attorney, so all the attorneys don't get insulted by this. When you've got two lawyers battling on sides, sometimes the logic is lost. And so as advocates, we will not go with a parent if you've got an attorney, because then that's the attorney representing the parent, and then the school board here is representing the school board. We like to be involved when you can bring where the emphasis is kept on the child, and we can bring the sides together.
We legislators who are not attorneys like to think that, too.
Ms.
McCormick.
First, I want to begin with a main reason where ARC, Minnesota ARC, and affiliated chapters, along with PACER, exist, is to keep due processes to a minimum so that we work with parents to resolve issues in a very good manner, in our opinion, and I think the opinions of both of our agencies would echo that. On the document, you will notice in just my quick review, this is the long one where it's the Special Ed Task Force review, the due process rules, some of them are covered on page 9 and 10, and you will notice that most of those votes on that page, there was agreement on whether or not to vote to amend to make more effective, as well as some suggested amendments that might be able to solve part of that issue.
Okay, thank you both very, very much. Before we go to the Department of Education, did any of the testimony trigger any questions where any member would like to have the Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation or the facilitator back, or should we go to the department? All right, back. Then we could have whoever's going to represent the department come forward. I've got two names on the list, but it's and or. So is it going to be Barbara Troyan, the Director of Special Ed? If you could, or Barbara Case, the compliance supervisor. Maybe you both could come forward, and then we can get some questions answered. And Representative Dabney is carrying it. There's been frequent mention to the aversive deprivation or restraints and seclusion topic, and that one, as the commissioner said, is... there was work from outside groups, with including NAMI Minnesota, who Sue Abderholden is here in the audience, and they came to substantial agreement on that topic. And Representative Dabney, I understand, is carrying that legislation. Do you want to say enlighten us about that at all, Representative Dabney?
Madam Chair, thank you. I don't believe it's been introduced yet. No, Ms. Abderholden is handy to have in the
back of the room.
Sadly, you can't remember which bills you've authored.
There are days. There are days. But it does represent, I think, a large level of consensus amongst the various stakeholders on where we can go comfortably on these issues of restraint and seclusion in the language that I'm used to using in the schools. And hopefully this is a place where we can make some progress and have some consensus and move that through the legislative process.
Very good. And if all members don't know, Representative Dabney actually used to work in a psych ward and use some of these procedures, so he has a good understanding, better than most, of when that might be appropriate or not.
Would you like me to demonstrate?
Representative, that'll be all right. Maybe I'll do it on you at a later point. Representative Detmer makes it easier because Representative Detmer is not here, so
right.
I know it's Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Patrick wrote down, too.
I'll go back to my original question, and this will be directed to the department. What is the boundaries or the scope of services that a school district, in terms of special education, in terms of after-school programs that are not sponsored by the school district, or it's just part of a parent group, how far does the school district have to go to provide services to families?
Ms. Trulin or Ms. Case? Ms. Trulin, if you could state your name for the record and then answer the question.
I'll state my name for the record, but I'll defer to Barbara Case, my colleague, to respond.
Okay. All right.
I'm Barbara Trulin, and I'm the Director of Special Ed Policy at the Department of Education.
Very good. Thank you for helping me to know how to pronounce your name, Trulin. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome, Ms. Case, if you could state your name and then help us with that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative
Detmer.
Detmer. You can call it Bob.
No, I don't think so. My name is Barbara Case, and I'm a supervisor at the Department of Education. Your question is, how far do school districts have to go in providing special education services to students beyond the school day and beyond school-sponsored activities? Mm-hmm. And I can only speak to my knowledge of what the law says. And to begin with, both the difficulty and the positive part of special education, as you know, is that it's individualized for each child. And so the largest part of that answer is that it depends on what the student's individual education plan says. So does that mean that it's different in different cases? I think it's different in different cases, depending on what the IEP team agreed that the student's plan should say. Beyond that, I'm only familiar with a federal regulation, which I did not bring my federal regulations with me. I only brought the state rules and the task force report. But it does say that schools have to provide, and I'm not going to quote it exactly because I didn't bring, I usually just like to read right from the law, but it does say that schools have to provide equal opportunity for students with disabilities to participate in extracurricular activities, and then they define that in their comments to the rules. They give examples of extracurricular activities, and I'm not remembering right now what that is. So I can only, state that that's what the law says.
Okay. Just a follow-up. So as a parent, if I'm going to conduct some type of activity after school hours, not in school facilities, say a birthday party or canoeing party or something like that, would I have the right as a parent to ask the school district to provide supervision for that type of activity?
Ms. Case.
Madam Chair, Representative
Detmer.
So it's hard to see those signs at an angle. Thank you for the question. I'm hesitating only because I hate to answer anything with a definitive answer, because I always would have to, look at things. I always want to go, And somebody who wants slides, go back and use it to answer two questions. So these committee answers, or you answer off the top of your head or whatever, are difficult. But I would say, in general, no. I don't think the law goes that. My understanding of the law is it doesn't go to the extent that, as you're describing it.
Yeah. Madam Chair, maybe just as a follow-up, maybe if you could maybe later on get me some answers that you could just give to me personally regarding what is the scope, how far does the school district have to go to provide services in special education?
Madam Chair, okay. Representative Demner.
It's close.
Detmer.
You know, doing research on a question like that is something that I just love to do, so I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think there are, those are the kind of, there's always high-profile questions, whether it's special ed or charter schools or any subject that, you know, gets to be out there as an urban myth or are true, and that they give, they're good things for us to get answers to, so we can put an end to thinking it or be concerned about it or whatever. But that's the kind of thing that I think legislators hear about from time to time. We had some questions or some comments earlier about there were a lot of the, or not maybe not a lot, but some of the questions under consideration for rules that were referred to other groups to do more with. And then we had some testimony at the very beginning about that it should be, if there were such other groups, that they should be led by the Bureau of Mediation, that the department was not neutral. Would either of you care to comment on that comment? Ms. Tulin.
Madam Chair and members, I would be happy to comment about the specific reference to a review of the eligibility criteria, since that seemed to be I'm not sure if it was a strong recommendation with specifics, but there were some concerns in 6 or 7 disability areas that needed to be perhaps cleared up or reviewed or changed, and that the department has a cycle of reviewing criteria from time to time. That has been a typical charge of the department and a responsibility of the Department of Education. And as part of that process, it is common to pull together stakeholders, parents and representatives of the director organization and Ed Minnesota, etc., not dissimilar to the cross-section of people that were on the task force. And the department brings together these time-limited kind of ad hoc groups. And often we say to the ed organizations, you pick the reps. We don't pick the reps. We pick the group, the grouping, or the ed org, and members can send whom they wish. And that's been on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a requirement to change the learning disabilities rule this last year because of the changes in the federal regulations. So that one is pretty fresh. So we are on target, in a sense, to be reviewing some of the criteria in the future, but we also, just as a comment, need to be sensitive to the fact that the Board of Teaching right now is going through a process of reviewing all special ed licenses. And although I haven't been a member of the group on a regular basis, the times that I have visited the committee and groups, the Board of Teaching, have divided into a couple of phases of activity for some competencies, core competencies, how to cluster perhaps some new ways of providing services to those in the mild disability category. There's some exciting discussions going on in that arena. And so it would be perhaps a consideration, if there's interest in a review of criteria, that there be consideration to the Board of Teaching work that is already in process.
Ms. Case, anything to add?
Madam Chair, I don't think so.
Okay. Now, the fact that these are rules and not statutes, other than the two that we got caught in the end of session crosshairs last year, or else they would have been acted upon, so we can go back and do those. But now we have recommendations for rules. And, of course, normally the rules are promulgated and changed and so forth by the agencies and not the legislature, unless we would decide, in which case we could, to, you know, get it, put things in statute instead of rules. What would be your intention, if we left it to the agency and your timeline and so forth, for acting upon the recommendations from the task force? Ms. Case.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative members, is that what it is?
Okay.
I think we would wait your direction, the legislature's direction, as to how we would proceed or should proceed or whether or not we should proceed on these recommendations from the task force.
Thank you. In this case, if we just said we will turn them over to you and we're not going to act the ones that are rules, then what would be the timeline, and would you just adopt them carte blanche and expect that there wouldn't be anything besides expedited rulemaking because these at least were agreed upon, or would you anticipate a lengthy process, Ms. Case?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think, again, if you're saying you would be saying to us, go ahead and proceed with what the task force agreed upon, mm-hmm. having just read the materials this morning, I think that that would be a relatively swift process.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions for the department? I guess I'd like to ask your opinion of recharging the group to go through the statutes, whether it would be the same group or not, and then I would like to I have at least a question or two for the commissioner from the Bureau of Mediation, but could I ask what your opinion of that is? You were resource people to the group, so you saw the dynamics and you're aware of the various groups and what their agendas are. Would you see that as productive to have this task force or another one, if these people are worn out, but you know, representing the same group, go through the statutes as the last testifier said? Had they had the tool of being able to modify, they could have come to more agreement, but they didn't have that tool until they got to the rules. Ms. Trulene.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, I was not a member. I did not attend any of the meetings at all. So I can only reflect on what I've read or what I've heard. I think it would be more important to have the stakeholder representatives than have a personal opinion about certain individuals. I think it's important to have stakeholder input across the board on such important processes.
Thank you. Ms. Case, were you there? I thought that the department... it was a different person altogether. Okay.
It was Amy Roberts, I believe, from Compliance and Assistance that attended the first year.
Oh, just the first year, not the second. Okay. All right. Thank you, then. Unless members... Oh, Ms. Representative Van Delt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very briefly, did the department monitor the meetings of the task force at least to stay abreast of the discussion and monitor the work of the group?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Don't try to say my name. You're doing fine.
Representative, I don't have personal knowledge of...
Okay.
In order to be able to answer your question, but it's my understanding that while not attending, we stayed abreast of the progress that the task force made.
Okay, thank you very much. And then if we could have Commissioner Hoffmeyer and Marianne Johnson, I'd just like to ask you the same question. If you think it would be useful for the legislature to charge the same group, and if it could be done in a year, to go through the statutes as you did the rules. And then I would ask anybody from the actual past. We already did ask the last two, and they said yes, and I'd like to hear from the first two. Commissioner Hoffmeyer.
Well, Madam Chair, certainly this task force, the entities and the individuals have developed quite an expertise of reviewing Minnesota statutes regarding special education. So the learning curve of being recharged and looking at the statutes would be a lot less time than was originally spent in the first year. So I would imagine that more substantive dialogue could occur should the committee choose to do that. Recharge naturally, the Bureau would be happy to facilitate any more convening of the task force or of a task force of the committee's choosing. But these seem to be the players, if you will, in Minnesota covering all aspects of special education. I am personally not aware of a stakeholder group that was not involved or not participating in these discussions for 2 years, but we certainly welcome any further directions from the committee.
Thank you very much. Ms. Johnson.
My comments would just be that if this gave task force members an opportunity to do what they did this year with the rules, and that was to actually suggest specific amendments whenever possible, I think there are a number of task force members who would support that. And that might be a very worthwhile endeavor.
Thank you very much. Could I ask Ms. Kelleher and Pumper the same questions? Ms. Kelleher.
Madam Chairman and members, it's an easy answer for me. I don't think it would be productive to get back the same group. Even toward the end, people were voting in constituency blocks. In fact, one of the members turned to me at one time and said, I've got to revote because I didn't vote on the right side. And I think when you get into people's and feelings in the group that get very partisan, even when it's not political, it's not good for the system. And I think there really needs to be a different kind of expert that really goes into depth here and goes forward.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Pumper.
Madam Chair, I don't think that this is the group that can go forth. We have so many statutes. Is it the statutes you're referring to going back to?
Yep.
Just so many of them to really get specific and do a good job, is what I should say, in recommendations that NDE can go forth with and that are clear. I don't think we can do that. That's why a stakeholder group is what I was saying. And I was just looking at the rules and trying to think of an example. And other health disability criteria, we had voted to that there should be go to a stakeholder group.
But Ms. Pumper, what would be a stakeholder group? That's what I thought this task force was.
A stakeholder group to further look into OHC criteria, and that stakeholder group would be very similar to this, but by what I was trying to say, by a neutral party. And I don't know if there's a neutral party other than BMS that could do something like this, that could facilitate a group. But to look at specifically just that rule. And I was a member of the SLD work group when we looked at writing the new, when the new regulation came out and we had to match federal regulation. And I just think that, I mean, it was a long process, writing, trying to think of the specific language and that would go into that rule to make it efficient. I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just going to make a comment, not a question so much, but I really appreciate the work that you folks did because as a former educator of 34 years, 22 of those being EBD. I mean, BDD and also teaching EBD. I've worked in the special ed area for 20 plus years, as I said. Those special ed folks, both on the professional side and the student side, really are looking to us for some direction. we really are looking for us to make a, I don't remember who said it here, but somebody said, if I just had time to take the kit. And believe me, I understand that, having done thousands of IEPs and annual reviews and periodic reviews and reassessments and assessments, and I can go on and on and on and on and on. So I'm hoping that we can set things aside and think about the very special educators and special education students that need us to make an impact in their lives on a very positive standpoint to get the job done, to allow the professionals to teach the kids. And so I just had to make that comment because, I did it for 20 plus years and the paperwork got overwhelming, the assessments got overwhelming, and it's no different than a regular classroom teacher, I understand that, but it is called special education for a very specific reason. And I think that we need to keep this in mind, that we have very special people involved in that whole field, from both sides. So I wanted to make that comment.
Thank you, Representative Ward. I think that was very appropriate and appreciated. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having just gone through a task force, as I mentioned, in District 11, one of the things that helped us is we brought in the various different teachers and the school nurse, someone from EBD, elementary, middle school, high school, teacher of special ed, people that did the filing, speech pathologists, we had principals brought in. And I think that this would be, as well as our special ed director, I think this would be a good group to work with and have the Department of Education there take this as a guideline to start with and then have the advocacy groups act as sort of consultants and putting in their advice, but to have people that actually work in the process to look at what we're doing and see if it can't be streamlined. No one wants to deny services to children. That's not the purpose, but we can't be providing services if we're spending all our time on paper and running to meetings. So that's my recommendation. Thank you.
Madam Chairman?
Ms. Humphrey.
First of all, I want to say amen to that. And I also had a question, though. Is that okay? I ask a question of, I don't know.
Representative Ward.
Representative Ward, thank you. As an EBD teacher, I just didn't see your little. Thank you. Okay, as an EBD teacher, and I have an EBD licensure as well, did you find it difficult to work with those who had emotional behavior disorder and those who had just behavior disorders?
Representative Ward.
Working with a student, do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I actually did not. I found it was, this might be Pollyanna, but that's just the way that I lasted for 22 years in that field. And I thought each student that I had, whether they had an emotional disorder or behavior disorder or a combination, I tried to find the uniqueness and strength of each of them and build from that. And I didn't find it difficult at all to work with either one of them.
I guess my question is because when you work with that in the classroom, those students in the classroom, that becomes difficult. Because we want to zero in on emotional issues, but then you have behavioral issues that over the years that I've been teaching have just escalated amazingly. And that's and this is just why, what I'm using for an example.
And, it's just the emotional behavior part. I think, I think Representative Ward said it well, that often they go hand in hand. It's I would question whether anyone that just had bad behavior could make it into special education. I think that might be a different category altogether. If we're doing that, then maybe we do need some clarification. But I usually see the behavior as a symptom of the emotional problems, I would think that that would, that they would usually be going hand in hand.
Madam Chair, can I add a comment? Please, another comment is that I tried to find an intervention for each individual person that was unique to them, and carried over into the classroom, transitioned into regular ed classroom. And I had to have the time to be able to do that. If I was taken away from the paperwork or the assessment, and I know that some folks up there are going, don't eliminate the testing, don't eliminate the, and I understand we have to have some of that. We have to. But we also have to have the time to find interventions, find ways that we can help our children, both within our special ed classrooms, but also transitioning into a regular ed classroom as well. Those little things, whatever we do for each of those kids. So we have to find time to do that as well.
Well, I'm going to summarize the meeting, and this is a little bit different than any hearing we've had, I think, recently or for quite a while, in the sense that I'm not sure what we're going to do as a result of this hearing. Representative Hillstrom carried this bill, and she was on K-12 finance last session, but she is not on this committee anymore. So I think that we'll have to consult with her, and we'll have to talk amongst ourselves. The chair is very open to advice from everyone in the audience as well as people on the committee. If we want to send the groups back and work with the Bureau of Mediation, which for some sort of task force with neutral representation. And if you want to critique my, when I get this summarized, we would welcome it. So, and then have them report in next year. We could have order the department to implement through their rulemaking all the suggestions that are agreed upon that we have here, and then they could proceed and we could monitor that. We could do some things in statute ahead of having any process, which I guess I wouldn't be too enamored with doing, but that's always the purview of the legislature. We have a lot of groups that have asked for certain things that have turned. We had a lot of suggestions when we asked school districts and others for where could we reduce mandates in the time of huge budget deficits. And I know Representative Tilbury was glad to hand over the special ed recommendations that were many to a different arena than his task force. But then, if we're going to do something this year, you know, as legislators, we, of course, are amateurs in the field ourselves. And so we have to kind of decide what to do. So I don't think we're going to decide that today. But Commissioner Hoffmeyer, you can have the last word before we adjourn. With any sage advice you could give us on all those options or any others.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've put me in the position of the child who raises his hand and asks for homework before a long vacation. As I was sitting here and as I've attended a couple of meetings of the task force, there's a lot of frustration expressed by the members of this committee and by the advocates who represent the task force regarding the procedures or how things are done. We didn't spend a lot of time in the task force talking about that, but another option that the committee may have to look at is looking at the lean process from the Department of Administration. Just by way of an example, the Bureau of Mediation Services at one time had 30-some employees, and we were able to let people build their silos. So if you had a representation request for work from somebody in International Falls, you went to this clerical person, this aide, and this hearing officer. Now we have 12 employees in our office. At one time we had 17 clerical people. For the last 7 or 8 years, we've had 5 clerical people. As I speak to you today, we have 3 clerical people. We're able to maintain our services to the constituents around the state of Minnesota, largely from the work that we did with Lean program through the Department of Administration. They came in, and for a couple of weeks, we focused on how are we going to break down these silos, how are we going to do procedures differently so it serves the constituents better. And we've done it, and we're, in my eyes, because of the lower FTEs, but with a new design of process and procedures, we're able to get our work done in a timely fashion. So that might be another idea for you to look at, is bringing in a representative from the Department of Administration and perhaps talking to them about special education procedures that perhaps have been in lockstep for many, many years, and what the committee does or the legislature does with the statutes and rules. There's some information before you, but perhaps it's the procedures that can go on a separate track along with anything else you might want to do for a future task force or this task force recharge.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay.
Okay, we're out of time, members, so good hearing, and the meeting's adjourned.